Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Fighting with this cat this morning.
Nice.
And also, I've got to figure out an issue with Christine's microphone. I'm not sure what's going on, but there's some sort of like noise artifact, some sort of interference in it, and I'm not sure if it's the microphone or a cord. Or her port. I know it's I eliminated one cord being the issue, but I still have to go through and try a different cord and then try my microphone plugged in to her port. It's a whole process.
But you
always go with the simplest thing first, which is I have cats. This is one, Ceres Victoria, and the cords are exposed. So you first thoughts are, did the cat chew on it? That was why I tried the cord thing first. Anyways, here we are having a technical discussion before the credits even roll. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Daily Cup of Genre here on the Genreverse YouTube channel and the Genreverse Podcast Network, available wherever you get your podcasts from. I'm Kyle. That's Manny. Hit the subscribe button if you're watching us on YouTube. Follow us on that app if you are listening instead. And then, of course, check out LRMonline.com every day for all entertainment news needs and opinions. And something I forgot to tell Manny, but today you guys are actually going to get to see a interview with the creator of the Night Terror comic, Tim Nardelli. So Tim Nardelli has been working on these characters and this story that you guys can see on YouTube right now, and a link in the description box below down to Endeavor Comics. But I did an interview with Tim not too long ago about these books. Lots of really great artwork, really cool, interesting look at the creation of a comic book. So that'll be a little bit later in the show. Sorry to surprise that on you, Manny. I forgot.
I mean, it got nothing to do with me, so it's all right.
Well, the good news is there isn't a lot of news, and that will fill up some time. No, it is a fun interview. Tim is a great guy and very, very talented artist. So check that out. The reason there being no news, guys. Well, there's the writer's strike going on. The leaks and stuff that we depend on but we as the industry, if you will, leaks, news and rumors that come during productions are halting and slowing down, and like things are grinding to a halt in Hollywood. And you guys can check out our big discussion on that yesterday. But The Little Mermaid is doing quite well with audiences. The critics didn't seem to care too much.
I gave it a good review. Jonesy gave it a good review.
Jonesy loved it. I just got done recording the Breaking Geek review for The Little Mermaid. So you guys should definitely check that out if it's not already up on the channel before this.
I have the t-shirt on right
check,
now.
Check it out. There you go. Look at you.
Yeah, I'm taking the girls out to watch it tonight, actually. So we're gonna watch it in IMAX. I'm excited for them.
The audience score, or not audience score, the critic score has fallen some. It was in the 70s at the beginning of the week, if I'm not mistaken, and it's fallen to 68 Not a certified fresh, not rotten. It's just got a tomato there. But the audience score makes this the highest rated live action remake of them all. Audience score of 95%, man. And like I said, check out their review. But Jonesy and Jammer both were glowing about this film. So yeah, man. Do you think it's the best of them all? I can't remember if you had said that.
What? Did I say what?
If this Little Mermaid is the best of all the live action remakes.
The only exception to that, in my opinion, which doesn't fall into the same category because it's not a princess movie.
Cruella, that's right.
In my opinion, yeah. But yeah, no, out of all of them, and it made me upset because I'm a big Beauty and the Beast fan, but even that had its own issues. Yeah, so here's, like, I was looking at some of the reviews, and it's like there's nothing
critics innovative. Or audience.
Oh, critics.
Critics.
And it's like there's nothing innovative or nothing new about this, or like it's just like this old movie. And it's like it's supposed to be.
That's the point.
It's a live action version of the film. And I mean, some of the spots where I did have issues with it, like they also do have issues with it. But I'm not gonna ding them that much for. I mean, there's one shot in Under the Sea where they have over like 500 fish and sea creatures in it. It's not gonna be that amazing. I think that where it needs to excel, it does, and that's the actual main characters. And I think that where they are innovative and they make the changes in setting this in the Caribbean. And kind of making it that instead of trying to just fit it in the world that the original 89 was, it just makes more sense. It flows better, and it kind of fits the Disney brand also with Pirates of the Caribbean, and now you have the Little Mermaid in the Caribbean. Not saying they're connected or anything, but it's a world that they're
Disney
comfortable
cinematic
in, that they know.
Universe.
Yeah. Well, there might be a princess cinematic universe. You never know.
I mean, Kingdom Hearts made it a thing through their multiverse
so
thing.
Much. Yes. Yeah. So
I mean, it's almost like I do too with the Kingdom Key and the Halloween Key back there, or Pumpkin Key.
I didn't really like the Halloween Key.
Lame, call yourself a horror. Shut up. Go ahead and talk. Finish what you were saying.
so anywho, yeah, it was good. It's just the Little Mermaid. Like I don't understand. This is the same kind of treatment I feel like sometimes like horror movies get, where it's like that you give a bad grade to Scream because all you did is walk. It's like all it does is like it's a guy in a mask walking around. Because
it's a Scream movie. That's
like,
bad.
Yeah, that's. But that's exactly what it's supposed to be. I hate critics.
What were they wanting to do? Set the Little Mermaid in the 21st century or something? I mean, come on now. That wouldn't have played very, very well at all.
The critics want to cancel King Triton because he has all the different daughters of different ethnicities, which means that he has a plethora of baby mamas.
He's polyamorous.
AKA the Nick Cannon of the seas. I don't know, man.
Is he really? I don't watch musicals for any audience that might not be regulars. I'm not a musical guy, so I have no skin in the game for the Little Mermaid, but is he really Nick Cannon of the seas?
I don't know, man. None of his daughters look alike. All of his daughters are different ethnicities.
Well,
man.
what if mermaids breed much like fish, and there's like, you know, a bunch of mermaids lay out some eggs, and he just comes and like carpet bombs across the eggs?
I don't know, maybe. yeah. However, he doesn't, man. He's ended up with quite the variety of daughters, and no mom to help him. Single dads all the way.
Oh man, you know, Disney is like one of the few places, and not every single dad is bad, but also not everyone is great. But Disney's one of the only places where you get to see a lot more single dads and actually get some relatively decent positive things out of it. I will give them that, even if the dads do mess up or they're kind of goofy like the Sultan in Aladdin. It's not one of the places that is just a not always a constant shit on the male. So good for them on that, I guess.
Look at this, a supposed top critic from San Diego. The only snippet they have from his review is part of the world of Lazy Remix. Sebastian's still fun.
Okay.
Yeah, come on, man. I don't know. I usually have a problem with the way that some top critics look at films because it's so it's almost like snooty and snobby. It's almost like, oh, because this isn't a The Irishman or something like, you know.
Yeah.
There was some, you know, some like nuanced, like
movie. Some hoity-toity shit.
Then it's bad.
And we love hoity-toity shit, guys.
We love it all, yeah.
Hell not everything has to be compared to hoity-toity shit.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
What do you think this takes, man? We had Kevin Davis 8646 in the comments quite often on our videos about box office take. Thinks this will do 900 to a billion worldwide and opening weekend of 130 to 150. What are you thinking, man? I don't agree with that.
No, it's not going to make that much money. It's going to make good money. I heard that the projections in China are not good.
I wouldn't think they would be.
Which do say a lot, unfortunately. Because they sometimes hold some of these movies up compared to other ones. I'm in the, like, there's a lot of people traveling this weekend. Mm-hmm. That's my thing. I mean, record numbers of people were traveling yesterday already on mm-hmm. flights and things like that. And I think I'm gonna 115.
You're close to me. I was thinking 110 opening, and we'll save our well, what do you think worldwide? Total. You don't know. I think because of the China thing that this and its potential, we don't know. It could end up, you know, doing better, but China doesn't necessarily have the greatest track record when it comes to enjoying characters that are played by people of color. But hey, that's their thing. Maybe maybe $750 to $800 worldwide, with maybe a U.S. take, which is going to be interesting. The audience loves it as much as they do. This could easily push $500-600 million,
Does Monday count as the weekend in this case?
It'll count as a three-day weekend for sure. All right,
I'll go 120.
You'll go 120.
Okay. Yeah, just to be a little bit farther from you.
Oh, okay.
And
so we'll see how it goes, ladies and gentlemen.
And then let's go ahead and put it at 220 worldwide
for the opening weekend.
Yeah,
I don't even know about that. Yeah. Anyways, we'll see how it all goes, guys. Let us know what you expect it to do in the comments down below.
Yeah.
That's the thing to do.
Oh. All right. I do have something for you.
Okay, what do you got?
Well, it's not news, but it's kind of news. This week, officially, the Arrowverse is technically done.
Oh yeah, the Flash has ended, right?
Yeah.
The non-fastest man alive for one last time.
Yeah, the non-fastest man alive. What do you think overall is kind of the what do you think the Arrowverse was able to do?
I mean, relatively to the grander scheme of entertainment as a whole, not a lot. It did manage to deliver some really fun shows for short periods of time. The first few seasons of The Flash, I thoroughly enjoyed, but after about season three, it starts kind of, and that's not to say that there weren't more peaks afterwards, but I couldn't stick with it. Arrow was similar for a lot of people I know that were hardcore into it for one, two, maybe three seasons, and then it started to falter. A lot of them seemed almost like the opposite of a Star Wars show, where Star Wars is like you got to get through like two bad seasons to get to anything good for the cartoons that is. This was you only get two good seasons of things. I liked the Supergirl character. I did not like her show. Her show was trash. But I liked her. Her character was fine whenever she popped up on some of the other stuff. I don't really think it made all that much of an impact. Because here's the sad thing, or not even necessarily sad thing. It's fine. The CW or the WB when I was a kid, like middle high school. And at one point UPN, because they combined anyways. Yeah. It's always been niche. The niche has changed, but it's always been niche and went from kind of that when it was the WB. I mean, look, it's stuck with being a niche thing, and that's fine. It served a particular audience, but that audience is not all that large. Hence the reason a lot of these things are ending and getting canceled or ending, like I said, which I guess can be canceled. It depends. If you got to finish your story, you ended. If you didn't get to finish your story, you got canceled. So the fact that so many of them aren't going to continue on, they're not looking at rebooting a bunch of this stuff or even replacing it with new heroes or anything like that, kind of shows you that, you know, in the world where there's so much entertainment to choose from and so much needs to get made, costs money and things are more expensive, it shows that it really wasn't all as big as some people thought it was. Bubbles on the internet really pushed it forward some, you know what I'm saying? But hey, I'm glad people enjoyed it. I'm glad it was fun, and I'm happy for everyone that got a chance to be in the limelight for a moment. Hopefully they go on to bigger and better things. I don't know, how do you feel about it? No more Arrowverse, man, you know?
I partially agree with you and partially disagree with you. In the sense that I really think it filled the cup for for comic book fans, at least in a sense that in a world where DC was really making this really strange versions of the films, thanks to Zack Snyder trying to rebuild the brand in his own imagination.
Everyone's Kryptonian.
It offered an opportunity for us to at least get to see some versions of the characters on a screen. It allowed us to see some storylines be told and see some of the stories that we grew up reading or seeing in cartoons to come to life. I think Arrow was it actually took about a season to really get going, but after that it really picked up and then it fumbled. And I knew this was happening because I remember reviewing and being very cautious about it. It lost its footing as soon as it started going into the supernatural. And then at that point, it really lost the luster of what made it special to me. And because once he defeated Ra's al Ghul, what was left? And and where are you going? Because you could only do so much. The Flash, the issue, and I agree with you there, got repetitive. It was another speedster, yeah. And he was never the fastest man alive. But you know, everyone who, you know, fans of the brand, everyone was really happy with Grant Gustin, to the point where there was a lot of people just saying, just let him play the Flash, because that's who a lot of people, you know, recognize as the Flash, because that's who they for years saw him as the Flash. Supergirl was okay. I just felt like a lot of times it got too preachy. I get it, you know, it's girl power, whatever, and all this, but tell me the story in a smarter way. Like,
I'll be honest, when I call our show garbage, it's not even necessarily for that, because I couldn't even get past just all of the acting, the characters, and the general like feel of her show on its own to even get to the point to where you could be all super preachy. But I do know that whenever she was on the other stuff, she herself was fine. Like, she interacted really with everyone real well, and yeah.
I really liked her as a Supergirl. Legends of Tomorrow, it was weird, but once they really really leaned into that weird, wacky kind of almost like Doom Patrol type Patrol for censored TV type fun.
Doom Patrol light.
Like, yeah, you know, it got really really good. And I can't say enough about how good Black Lightning was, because that was very well
done. Yeah.
That,
and don't, I was going to say, don't get me wrong, when I say that these were relatively unimpactful, like I said, that's on the grander scheme of things. I know a lot of people have very similar feelings to you about things like Black Lightning, especially, and that they are loved, and that a lot of people find them very entertaining. And so, I'm not taking anything away from that. I just don't see a lasting, you know, what I'm saying?
No, like, I don't.
Unfortunately,
Black Woman was forgettable quite a bit.
Batwoman,
They had their issues with, you know, the actual Batwoman. And I just think over the scheme, just overall, it's great, because in the end, almost right at the end, is when they gave us Crisis on Infinite Earths, and it gave us a lot of little treats there that we to this day, and who knows, we may not ever see on television. We got to see Brandon Routh again as Superman. Mm-hmm. We got to see Kevin Conroy as Kingdom Come Batman, which was pretty special.
Tom Welling
came back, as Clark, but he was there. Mm-hmm. I mean, just really cool stuff. There was a lot more cameo. Oh, it gave us the Flash and the Flash,
which was
actually really really nice.
And doesn't matter anymore.
Well, it still does for a bit.
Won't matter in a couple of weeks.
you never know that he can stay. He can stick around. You never know. Because all I've heard from anyone who's seen that movie is that it's that is very, very good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I keep hearing that. I'm interested in it.
So
I'm super stoked about Spider-Man this upcoming week, though.
So, yeah, we were talking about Spider-Man the other day, and he's like, do you think Spider-Man's going to be good? I was like, it's going to be good, but it's not going to be Into the Spider-Verse, like the first one, good. Because,
are you sure? Because a lot of people are saying this is better. I have seen this comparison many. People are calling this the Empire Strikes Back of Spider-Man, or of comic book animated comic book movies. The Empire Strikes Back, man. That's a bold thing, and that's different than a Nick Dahl. Oh, it's an A+. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah. But the thing, my argument with it, and I'm not saying it's not going to be good, and I hope it is, and I hope that it is an Empire Strikes Back type movie, is that when the first one came out, we were all very surprised by the tone, by the animation, by the pacing, and the kind of the storytelling, and then also had a phenomenal soundtrack, which included that awesome Post Malone song, Sunflowers, that really put it all together and just delivered just an amazing experience. The difficulties filmmakers have usually is being able to recapture that and to expand on it. And then to make it worse, you're not including just a couple of Spider-Man. I mean, this is Spider-Man everywhere. So how wonky can it get? I'm saying can it get, because it could work, and if it does work, I'm very happy for it, and I'm here for it. I'm going to go watch it. I'm excited for it too.
Yeah,
but I'm just saying it just has a higher hill to climb as far as
tempering expectations is never generally never a bad thing to do. So yeah, I hope it's good. I really do. I really thoroughly enjoyed the first one. I started playing through the Spider-Man Miles Morales. I mentioned this the other day, talking about the Spider-Man 2 game, and just it things like Spider-Verse, things like the old cartoon, things like this game, and even moments in individual Spider-Man movies remind you of just like why that character is so damn popular, so damn fun. How someone would choose to be able to walk and crawl on walls and swing through a city versus straight up flying. Me personally, I just want teleportation. But you know, people like the idea, the quips, the style, the struggles that Peter has to go through, or Miles has to go through for that matter, since we're speaking of Spider-Verse, the trials. Anyone that knows the comics knows that this movie has a bad thing coming in it. How it plays out with the whole multiverse and stuff, you know, kind of depends, but we know a very, very bad thing is coming. It's exciting, and the character speaks, and that's what makes Miles such a cool thing to me. He's unique in the way that he became the next Spider-Man, you know, the young ward that takes the place, the future torchbearer, because he is his own character, but he was inspired by Spider-Man. He doesn't just try to replace Spider-Man. You don't just, oh, this is their kid and they're exactly like them, throw them in the suit and give them the name, looking at you, X-23, from time to time. When Miles is his own person, but he was just like us in a way, being inspired by Spider-Man. It's cool, man. I really dig it. I hope it's great.
The thing that I get usually from things like that, because you know, we're seeing this movie come out, it's gonna be amazing, the game's gonna be great, the past games are gonna be great, everyone's replaying games right now because it gives you the feel that you want to pick up a controller when you're watching the gameplay. By the way, the people, other people I've talked to throughout yesterday were like, yeah, this just looks like every other Spider-Man game. But who cares? It's a Spider-Man game. And I was like, I was like, I know, I get that.
I'm not jumping up and down like I do for Final Fantasy, but it's pretty damn cool to me, man.
I'm not saying it's not cool. I'm just saying like it's literally the same thing, just different skins. But so what I don't understand, and I'm not trying to go down a rabbit hole, is how the heck do we not have a successful film franchise for Spider-Man on its own already? I don't understand how.
What do you mean?
I don't understand how you could mess it up so bad that you need Marvel Studios help.
To figure it out. Yeah. How? I mean, the Sam Raimi trilogy was successful, wildly successful. The third movie, yeah, gets panned, but it made.
Third movie was terrible. I agree.
The Amazing Films are awful in every way, financially and story, in my opinion. Acted, aesthetics. Anyways, and then the Holland films are great in my opinion, and except I don't know No Way Home. I won't watch it again. I don't think it holds up. I don't think it either.
It does either.
I have no nostalgia for Toby and Andrew, and without that, I don't think that film has much.
I really 100% agree with you.
So, which is a shame because I really like the Holland trio, him, MJ, and Ned. So. We'll see what happens. Anyways, I think we are good to hand it off to a past version of myself for an interview with Night Terror creator Tim Nardelli. Ladies and gentlemen, fans of the Daily Cup of Genre, I'm very happy to welcome Tim Nardelli to the show. Some of you guys might have seen his name, some images, something about some comic character, a demon, what? You might have seen some of that stuff around our website, and it's Demonolith, by the way, guys. He is a lot of things, but we're here to talk about comics in particular. But Tim, why don't you give everyone a sense a little bit about where you're coming from, what else it is that you do, and introduce yourself to our audience.
Thank you very much for the introduction, Kyle, and hello everyone to the Daily Cog. My name is Tim Nardelli. I recently did a comic book referred to as a pilot issue called Night Terror. And in addition to my background in art and comics, I've also had the wonderful opportunity to collaborate on such films as Dark Web, where I was a co-producer on that, and I contributed concept art to that film. I was also a co-producer on the Amazon TV series Dark Web, and I was very much involved in the art side of that TV show as well. And this is the first comic book project that I have worked on called Night Terror, and it gives me great pleasure to release it to the world and to also debut it here at Genreverse to further promote it and to share the ins and outs of this potential new comic book series.
Well, I mean, and looking at the books, which of course, thank you for my copies. There's three here. You can see a lot of that. Three different covers is what you did for your pilot issue, which we'll get into why you call it a pilot issue in a bit. But you can definitely see the influences of, like you said, horror and a little bit of sci-fi. There's almost a Geiger niche to the Demonolith. So I dig that. I have to ask, you know, where did this idea for Night Terror and its characters come from?
Well, it all arcs back to when I was in college at SCAD. I think I was either a sophomore or a junior back then. We had an assignment where we had to tell a one-page story in the form of watercolor. And so the task was to tell a single story in the sequential comic book page. And what better way to tell a story than a man waking up from a horrible night terror? So even though that...
I can relate.
So even though that assignment had concluded, something about, you know, the simplicity of that page and you know, just the overall aspect of it in terms of someone waking up from a nightmare. Something I just gravitated to the potential of that idea in terms of how can we build a story around this? Because while it's such a simplistic, you know, story, of course, but what if there was more to it that we weren't seeing in this page that ever since then, I had just gravitated to that and wanting to see what more could we kind of, you know, delve into the story and really develop it further. That from there, it just became kind of like this, you know, catalyst to what was originally just one page story. Let's see if we can develop it even further.
So there's three things that I noticed going through all of this. You have three loves going into this project that I could identify. One, a love of comics. Otherwise, you wouldn't pick that medium. It is a very, very diverse but also difficult medium because of that. I sometimes feel the more options you have, the harder things can become. And comics offer a lot of options, a lot of sandbox to play in. But so you got a love of comics. You got a love of film that goes into this as well. And I guess you say film and music, but I only wanted to say three things because it sounds cooler than four. So you got your love of music and film. But there's also a love of the process, the process of comics, the process of art, the process of film. You did a featurette that goes along with Night Terror. Yeah. I can respect that. I'm a big fan of behind the scenes, behind the camera type stuff. Of those three, am I right in identifying those loves first?
Indeed. And as far as being an avid fanboy of comics, you're definitely on track.
there we go. So which is it of those three that really is driving this project that do you feel?
Well, to be honest with you, Kyle, it's kind of hard to narrow it down to just one, just because, I mean, it's those three elements that you just mentioned that really, you know, gave birth to not only the featurette, but also this comic book series as well, too. And I didn't really mention the featurette, so thank you very much for mentioning that.
Yeah, no problem. You guys can find it at the LRM Online YouTube channel and, of course, lrmonline.com.
And I'll touch on that real quick. The featurette was designed to not only showcase my ability as an artist to how I create comic books, but to also give those who are interested in comic books that want to develop like their own comic books, who otherwise may not know like where to start or how to take like their idea and develop it further. This is the featurette was a means to kind of like showcase people, okay, this is how an idea starts. This is how we put it into practice from beginning, middle, and end. So this is a means for like those who have an interest in comic books and really want to like either write for comics, draw for comics, color for comics, ink for comics, an opportunity to see like how they can get involved. The featurette is kind of like an incubator for potential new IP, because since Night Terror is a new comic book property, people may not be familiar with it. So considering how new it is, that this is an opportunity to just give, you know, viewers more insight as to who these characters are in the world of Night Terror, that when the actual comic book series is eventually greenlit, which I hope to announce at some point in time in the foreseeable future, there's a little bit more insight to, okay, this is something new, but we got a little glimpse as to who these characters are.
Let's dig into a little bit more into a couple of your characters, including the leading man here on the front, guitar player. Bassists are better, I'm just going to say, but Matt Deo, there we go. Sorry. Matt Deo, tell us a bit about Matt, where he comes from in your mind.
Well, Matt Deo was when I first came up with the character, I knew very little about him. That when I first designed him, I don't know what it was, but I just could feel elements of a musician to this character. So I kind of went with that. And since the story takes place in the early 90s, I know I'm going to date myself here, but, you know, the early 90s was definitely the time of grunge music.
Mm-hmm.
That something about, you know, having the main character being the musician in this particular time period just seemed very appropriate. When I was further designing the character, I want the character to feel like a musician and really feel like someone would really want to go see him perform. But to answer your question, where he fits in the story is we have a character that is, you know, an aspiring musician who is wanting to pursue his dreams of becoming, you know, a rock star. And life, you know, throws him a curveball as his dreams of becoming a musician end up becoming interrupted as the night terrors that he once had as a child has now resurfaced. His subconscious and reality are becoming one and the same, and is finding it difficult to distinguish the two. And that's the premise of the story, is him overcoming his inner fear without losing his sanity.
So it's easy to see how people can quickly get into a story like this. Relatability always was like the thing that drew me to more Marvel comics than DC. I can't relate to a perfect god, basically, you know, whose clothes don't even get destroyed in their fights, but I can relate to the nerdy kid that's got, you know, money issues. I can relate to the guy that, you know, seeks his comfort in, you know, vice and a Tony Stark. So I dig that.
Yep, and that's definitely who Matt Deo is, you know, down on his luck, you know, trying to make ends meet while also trying to pursue his dream of, you know, stardom, being the next Kurt Cobain, being as far as music is concerned.
Well, you can't talk about the night terrors and interfere without talking about what appears to be the big bad the monolith. Talk to us a bit about your creature.
Well, when I first designed her, her design originally was like very generic, you know, red skin, horns. And when I started greenlit the project, the featurette and the pilot issue, I just knew that, you know, that whole like cookie cutter devilish figure with like horns wasn't gonna cut it. So I really wanted to make the monolith look like a manifestation of nightmares in her appearance, and essentially, you know, make her look unique and distinguished and signature, in the sense of, oh, we've seen something like this already. Oh, this reminds me of something I've seen in the horror film I just saw on Netflix last night. So it was really important to make her overall appearance as distinguished as possible. You had mentioned earlier H.R. Giger. I mean, nothing is more legendary than the xenomorph from the film Alien.
Nothing. Which just is, about nothing, yep.
Which is one of my all-time favorite movies. So obviously we're dealing where the xenomorph is a sci-fi alien creature. The Demolus is, you know, a horror-based creature. So while the general aesthetic was vastly different, but coming up with something landmark with the Demolus was definitely the end game, just like with Ridley Scott designing, co-designing the xenomorph with H.R. Giger.
Out of curiosity, you mentioned Alien being one of your favorite movies. What is your favorite movie creature? Like, what creature of nightmares just really does Tim Nardelli dig?
It's definitely the xenomorph. I very much love the first Alien films, but the second Aliens film is by far my favorite, because I'm a big fan of James Cameron. And I also love like his redesign over the xenomorph figure. It's kind of hard to describe, but I've always admired the design and look and feel, because that's unlike anything we've ever seen in cinema. Mm-hmm. And when the first Alien film came out in 1979, if I'm not mistaken, we had never seen like an alien creature like that before. We've seen countless designs of aliens, but nothing like that before. And that is just something truly unique. When the second Aliens film came out, the way in which James Cameron, you know, shot that film and shot the xenomorphs, you barely saw them. They were usually in the dark, and you only saw like hints of like blue lights. And mm-hmm. that just really intensified like that whole overall sci-fi fear and horror.
To kind of wrap up the story, but the stuff here in the book, you do have another realm, another world, the Necroplane, and it's one thing to create characters or even creatures that exist here on Earth, so to speak. It's another to look at creating an additional world. Tell us a bit about the Necroplane and what came into creating that.
Well, as I had stated earlier, when designing the Demolis, I wanted to avoid putting the character's overall design in like a visual box, because as an audience, as like comic book readers, film buffs, and TV buffs, we're accustomed to seeing like, you know, some of the religious tropes in cinema these days, that it was very important to, much like with the Demolis, it was very important that the Necroplane didn't have like any hellish like elements to it. Mm-hmm. With the exception of the flames, but that had to be in there. That it was
gotta have fire.
Yeah. I'm sorry, what did I say?
I was just saying you gotta have fire.
Exactly. So it was very important that the Necroplane had like this demonic, nightmarish feel to it, as opposed to hellfire all over the place. We didn't want to do that. Part of what inspired the idea is, years ago when I was in Paris, France, there is in fact below the city, there are the catacombs, where there's just like wall after wall filled with skeletons as a result of the Black Plague. When you go in there, it's not like these tormented souls, it's just skeletons that are just occupying every square inch of the catacombs. And I also remember another time when I was in Rome, Italy, when I was on tour. As you know, may know, Rome, Italy is built on top of another city, that there are areas in Rome, Italy, where you can look down and see what they refer to as necropolis. Mm-hmm. So when I just looked down there, you could see like the remnants of what used to be, and you know, God only knows what else is down there. That when I was designing the Demolis's like very dwelling, I wanted to kind of bring out that same feeling that I had when seeing the catacombs. And also seeing necropolis. So instead of like seeing blood, guts, and torture in the Necroplane, all we're seeing is, you know, like these caves and like these skeletons, and with a bit of flames. And since the Necroplane is like an island in a supernatural landscape, I thought it would be even more interesting to have like this kind of like lava-y surface. Mm-hmm. So it just felt more like this natural, like, and demonic architecture, as opposed to going all Event Horizon.
I would wager we covered all the big points, the big things that everyone should be really interested in seeing. Was there anything else in particular that you wanted to cover, or are you ready to shamelessly self-promote this book and tell people more about where they can find things connected to it?
Well, as of right now, in terms of where to pick up a copy of all three covers that you just showed, is endeavor-comics.com. And with that said, I do would like to take this time to greatly thank you and everyone else at Genreverse for promoting this comic book series and for promoting the featurette. The feedback we've been getting, and you know, the fanboy and fangirl endorsements that we've been getting with both the featurette and the comic book, is just absolutely wonderful. So thank you all for promoting this.
I you know, get in on the ground floor, ladies and gentlemen, because this is like my son's college, and then this one's like, you know, our second house, and this is like, you know, the Japan vacation. So all right, Tim, it's been really great having you on here again. Thank you so much, guys. Check out Tim's books and other things going on. You can find it all, of course, lrmonline.com and Endeavor, as Tim had mentioned. There will be links in the description box down below for you guys. Thanks again, and we'll get back to Manny and future Kyle again. All right, thanks, past self and Tim, again, guys. Link in the description box down below if you're interested in picking up a copy of the Night Terror pilot there. Pilot issues. You guys can find, of course, more content at lrmonline.com every day. All entertainment news, needs, opinions, the podcast can be accessed there. Written reviews, celebrity interviews from the LRM YouTube channel. Speaking of YouTube, if you're watching us on that, hit subscribe. We've got a lot of great content here. Breaking Geek Radio, like I said, Little Mermaid review coming up this today, anime reactions and reviews, the cantina for Star Wars stuff. Yeah, and if it's not a reaction video, the audio goes up on all your favorite podcast apps. So yeah, do all that, following and subscribing, commenting even. So anything else, Manny, for the week? We made 4 out of 5 shows, man. Not too shabby.
Yeah, on a week that we weren't supposed to.
Yeah. Probably next week just be the 3, though, guys. So, yeah. Any final words for the weekend, Manny?
If you're in California, stay out of goddamn rivers.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, officials have had so many pressers this week about just kids have died because parents are. And you will go to jail.
Yeah, they said they're finding people and pushing to the extreme. Stay out the rivers, guys. Be safe. Have a oh my god, the weekend, guys. Please take a moment to remember those that gave their lives in service of this country. Memorial Day is not for veterans still kicking like myself. This is for those that gave the last full measure in defense of this nation. So keep that in mind. Happy Memorial Day, guys. Have a good, safe weekend. We'll see you next week.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.